It's WEEI Football Sunday here on Boston Sports Original. Shine and Mega with you this morning. Arcand is out sick today, but joining us now, it is our guy, Tom E. Curran, to tell us about Patriots Colts. Tom, how are you today, my friend? Hold on. There we go. Tom, how are you today, my friend?
Tremendous. What's going on, Shine? Hi, Mega.
Hey, what's up, Tom?
How are you?
Tom, heading into this game, what do you think is the biggest thing you want to see from Gerard Mayo and company against an Indianapolis Colts team that has not been great this season?
I want to see a return to some of the crispness we saw in the 4 weeks prior. You know, the Patriots have started games really well offensively in the past few weeks, last week included. You know, they were moving the ball in the first quarter. So I think Alex Van Pelt has done a good job with his opening scripts. So continue to do that. But this is a quarterback at Anthony Richardson who's completing 47.7% of his passes. That's like 1940s level completion percentage. So given what has happened against good quarterbacks that this team has faced and veteran quarterbacks, they need to show that Anthony Richardson is not going to be a player that breaks out against them. I mean, obviously the defense, I think, has cropped up, as both you guys would agree, is a major trouble spot. They're not getting better. They're getting undressed on a regular basis. If that happens against Anthony Richardson, it's probably more cause for alarm than whether it be Tua or Aaron Rodgers or Geno Smith or anybody else who lit them up. The Anthony Richardson thing would really stick out.
Tom, our friend Mike Reese wrote about Drake May's turnovers in his Sunday notes today. And I'm wondering what your opinion is about the old Bill Belichick saying, and was widely accepted in Foxborough for decades, that before you learn how to win, you have to learn how to not lose. Do you feel like that is still as, relevant in the post-Josh Allen development era of quarterbacking now, and with a big play maker like Drake May compared to some of the quarterback styles that previously came through New England?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It depends what the strength of your team is. And I think generally you're looking at offense when you're saying trying not to lose or playing to not lose or figuring out how not to lose, whichever way you want to phrase it. If you're a team that is really easily lit up on defense, a little confused, a little undermanned, don't bring pressure, you're going to have to be more aggressive on offense. So I agree with the premise, and it makes sense, but this isn't a team with one side of the ball that's ridiculously stable, the way the Patriots had been built in the late 90s and into the 2000s when Bill Belichick came back. It was a very good defense. You already had Ty Law, Lawyer Malloy, Ted Johnson, any number of players on the defensive side of the ball when Bill came back. So they could afford to say, oh, okay, we can just dead in two, don't take any big risks. This is a team that has to take risks. It's going to be built around Drake May, and he's going to be their bread and butter for years. So it would apply if the game and the team structure was different. I think you do have to throw caution, not completely to the wind, but there's going to be times where you have to put the ball in harm's way more than we were accustomed to seeing for 20 years.
Tom, you talked about Anthony Richardson, him having a good day sticking out. Are you afraid, though, that Shane Steichen's just going to take the ball out of his hand and give it to Jonathan Taylor and kind of run right at the Patriots, a team that, you know, when they played the Jaguars in London, the Jaguars ran, what, 18, 19 straight times? Do you think that the run defense is going to be an issue today for New England?
It'll be interesting to see what kind of impact Barmore will have in his second week back. They have Jonathan Taylor, I think, is one of the best backs in the league. And if you remember a couple of years ago, I think it was 2021 when they played Indianapolis. And they were, at the time, the Patriots were a very good team. Jonathan Taylor ran right through their face.
I think that was
the
Max
entire
rookie
day. Yes. Yeah. And they, at that time, the Patriots, I think, were like the 2 seed in the AFC.
Correct.
And then things went bad. but I mean, I honestly, we have these conversations, Shime, and it's interesting because I can't reliably predict or envision what's going to happen because the personnel is so average. They're either going to make the plays or they won't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like you can scheme something up. I haven't seen them scheme anything. I haven't seen them take things away from other teams. They were better against the run on occasion, but you still see plenty of 8-9 yard runs where they just get absolutely gashed. So if I were the, what's interesting, I will say this, the Patriots will have to play zone defense with Anthony Richardson because he is a threat to run. So they can't be playing man and turning their back because Richardson will, you know, take off and he ran 10 times for 62 yards last week. So they'll have to play a lot of zone. Maybe that can help them a little bit in their run support too, if, you know, at the linebacker level.
Hey, Tom, you talk about scheming it up. It feels like to me, just like with the offense, this team starts the game really well on defense. The initial plan when they come out is strong. They generally get a couple punts here, and then the offense adjusts and the defense doesn't. Do you see that as an issue, a lack of adjustment from DeMarcus Covington mid-game?
It's a good question, because I think what you have to presume that as the game wears on, there's a tweak to whatever you're doing, and then you need to tweak back. But I think the Patriots are not so stable along their second level and their front, especially with pass rush, where they can just say, well, we're just going to do our stuff. We're just going to be who we are here. And we're going to have players who you cannot beat, simply. So they have to be a little bit more aggressive, I think, at different times. They can't just sit back because teams, as you mentioned on the running, you have to bring extra guys and run support. And then that leaves you empty on the back end. So I think it's a couple of different things. I think it's Covington getting used to it, but I definitely think it's also a personnel issue. You can't generate any pass rush. You have smallish corners on one side who are willing, you know, run support players. You've been without Jabril Peppers. You've had some experience at the safety position. So when we look at the defense, we can talk about offensive tackle and wide receiver all we want. They need edge and another corner as well. There's a lot going on here.
Okay, so on that note, your colleague Phil Perry, he called this upcoming slate of games the evaluation period for the rest of the season. How confident are you in the Patriots front office and coaches to be able to accurately evaluate the talent that they're seeing on the field outside of Drake May?
Yeah, I don't know if they know what they're looking at. I'll be honest. I spoke about this a couple times on my podcast, also on TV with Andrew Callahan on Friday night. You know, if you really look at the things that Elliott Wolf said in April, evaluating his team when we asked him, do you have enough to support a young quarterback? And he proclaimed so many different players were going to make contributions who didn't. I mean, they projected Chukwuma Okorafor as being a left tackle, even though he had never played there. Same thing with Caden Wallace. Chukwuma quit. Caden Wallace has had a broken ankle, hasn't been able to get over there. Jalen Polk is not a good player at this juncture. Javon Baker's worse. They're part of the group that brought in Tyquan Thornton, Pierre Strong, the litany of 2022 draft picks, including Cole Strange. God bless him. Hopefully he'll get out there and actually make himself relevant at some point. But they've been part of this disintegrating roster, Elliott Wolf and Matt Groh have. And I don't have high confidence that they're any better than somebody sitting there with a draft guide. Where is the evidence that they are really adept at bringing in good players? It's an embarrassing level of player on their offensive line. I mean, not to besmirch the players individually in their effort, but you can't comprise an entire offensive line of practice squad players, which is literally what they've been doing. And that's not really injury related. That's by decision.
Tom, Mego and I talked about this even yesterday and into today. Is there any way that the Patriots would reach kind of outside that normal like circle of trust that they've kind of had here with going to like the Green Bay affiliates and the Cleveland affiliates, anybody that's known Elliott Wolf over the last, you know, 10 years and finding somebody completely outside the organization to come in and help with these decisions?
I would hope. Here's the interesting thing, Sean. I think at some point the Patriots have to be in a new broom sweeps clean mentality at some point. If this doesn't work, it was nice, it was great, everyone had a blast, but they're right now trying to keep one foot in the past and 1 foot in the present, and I don't know what the vision is for the future. They wanted to change from the way Bill was in terms of persona and vibe around the team, and I understood that. But it's player-based. It's totally player-based, and Bill was not a good talent evaluator by the end either. They've been that bad, so I don't know why you would want to continue to maintain a personnel structure that is similar to what you've been doing that hasn't worked. You got to change it at some point. And they're going to go 4-13 last year. They might go 3 or 4 or 5, and however many gets you to 17 with those this year. They're not a good team. They're well under 500 for the last 5 seasons. So to continue to think that they need to remain attached to the DNA of what happened for 20 years is, I think, foolish.
It's been a lot of big picture questions that we've been running through, Tom, and I like those conversations a lot, but looking at this game, what do you predict for the Patriots?
I was talking to Chris Long this morning. I said, they're so hard to predict because they played 4 games with decent capability. Got 2 wins, had 2 narrow losses to the Titans and Rams. And then they played so badly last week. I am going to presume that they will hold the Colts down and the Colts will not go off on them offensively. Anthony Richardson should get a little bit of the Caleb Williams treatment. And I'm also going to presume that they're going to take better care of the ball, and the structure of their first couple of drives is going to carry forth, and they are going to win this game 23-13.
Woo!
How's that, man?
I like that.
Love that.
Popping corks.
Let's go. All right. You can catch him every Tuesday with Jones and Keefe, every Thursday with the afternoon show here at WEEI. He is Tommy Curran of NBC Sports Boston. You can also check him out on the old Quick Slants podcast. Thank you so much, Tom. Enjoy the game today, my friend.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me. Take care.
That's Tommy Curran. Next, Mego is going to depart. She is going to head down to Gillette Stadium. Mego, thank you for your time today. We will welcome in John Lyons to continue with WEEI Football Sunday. But right now, let's get you caught up with what's trending. It's WEEI Football Sunday here on Boston Sports Original WEEI Shime. And now John Lyons is in with me. Lyons, what's up, bud? It's been a minute.
Yes, you have Mego Light. Maybe
Mego
now,
light,
right?
Yeah.
Less interesting, Mego. Yeah, no, not bad, Shime. It's been a little while since we've been on the air together. A lot has happened in between. I mean, you were in London.
Yes,
of all
I was.
Places, so.
The best city in the world.
Yeah, I was pretending to be a combination of you and Greg Hill on Friday.
Nice.
With Dan Ball. By the way, those who haven't heard Dan Ball out there, great new addition to WEEI. Pleasure working with him. I know, obviously, you'll be with him soon, but.
Yeah, I'll run into him eventually. I have no doubts. He's with the afternoon program now. As we get into talking about Pat's Colts here, John, you haven't been here yet. So we'll kind of reset a little bit. What is your kind of biggest takeaway, your biggest interest in this Patriots-Colts game as the Colts come to Gillette Stadium at 1 o'clock today?
Well, when you guys had Fitzy on earlier, he said something that I thought made a lot of sense, and it piqued my interest in that it was a football IQ test type day.
Definitely.
And I agree with that a lot, because if you look at the Patriots' loss to the Rams and following it up by the loss to the Dolphins, they were almost identical to me to week 2 against the Seattle Seahawks and week 3 against the Jets, where you play an NFC West team at home, 1 o'clock, it's a close game, you have a chance to win it at the end, you fail in a few key situations, and then you follow it up with a game against a division rival where you play awful.
Yeah.
So I know it wasn't exactly this, but it felt very similar. And what concerns me is after that Jets game, what happened? You got blown out by San Francisco, and you kept losing and losing and losing. Now, look, they won 2 out of 3 games, but then they had those 2 losses. Can they bounce back? Can they play a team? Because you're not playing San Francisco this time around. You're playing the Colts. Can they bounce back and actually play well? And the pre-snap penalties.
Oh, those need to stop. Whether it's the illegal formations,
the turnovers,
the false starts, all of that. Like, illegal motions,
blown
they
coverages.
All need to stop.
Them. Like, I mean, Devon Achane's, both of his touchdowns on Sunday, I thought were just miscommunications. And sure, nice play designs by Mike McDaniel, but that's another piece of this, too. And we can get into this a lot more later. I know we got to get to inactives and stuff coming up, but the Patriots got out-coached significantly the last couple games.
Yeah.
Big problem. And
this is an opportunity for Jerod Mayo to kind of bounce back.
I would agree. And I felt going into the Rams game that that was the best coaching staff they had faced all year, and it probably would be the best coaching staff they faced all year. Yeah. Sean McVay and his guy, they've been to two Super Bowls. They've won one. You know, he's legit, right?
There's
one of the best.
Good coaching staffs they have to play here at the end of the season, though.
Right.
With, I mean, Jonathan Gannon is way better than we expected him to be. Yeah. The Jim Harbaugh organization, and then, yeah, you know, the Bills.
And of course,
the Bills.
The Bills are the Bills. Right. So I thought they got wildly outcoached in that Rams game. Defensively, they were slow to adjust. We all know that cover zero call early in the third quarter. Oh. But just on the whole, it felt like the Rams were getting chunk plays early in almost every single drive. I looked up 8 out of their 10 drives, and the first two plays, they got at least 10 yards.
Yikes.
On run or pass, right? So point is, they get really outcoached in that game. What does Mike McDaniel do? Well, the Patriots had trouble with motions and shifts and all that stuff, so I'm just going to do a bunch of that, which the Dolphins do anyway. Mm-hmm. Patriots couldn't handle it. So if I'm the Colts, I come into this game, and I know the Colts motion traditionally a lot less than those two teams.
Very much so.
But if I'm the Colts, I'm just going to motion. I'm going to shift around. I'm going to do it. Show me you can stop that. And I'm going to run up the middle. Can they bounce back? Can they adjust? Can they stop that stuff?
Well, so that's my big thing is I think the running game is largely important for the New England Patriots to stop this week, because it is, your defense looks a little bit different now than it did a few weeks ago when, yeah, you know, Jacksonville was just running down your throat constantly, and other teams continued to do it. Christian Barmore is now in the middle of that defense. He's working his way back. He's getting more and more snaps as the weeks go on. And so he is going to make a big impact on if you can stop Jonathan Taylor. We were talking to Tommy Kernan, and he brought up that game. Mac Jones started against the Colts in 2021, where Jonathan Taylor came out and ran for
Saturday
170
night game.
Yards. Absolutely cooked
and
your
didn't
ass.
He have, like, the 70-yard touchdown run to ice the game at the
yeah.
end? And that's another game, too, not to get off track, but Patriots had a block punt for in that game
yep.
that killed that. Like, can you, last week, right, would miss an extra point early, or field goal early? Like, same thing against the Rams, you miss an extra point. Like, can they not do those stupid
things. Self-inflicted wounds.
Yes, they avoid that?
It's going to be imperative, and I think that this is an opportunity, too, where it's like you look at the Colts on paper, and it's like, okay, the two things we need to stop are deep balls from Anthony Richardson, because it's the one thing he does extremely well, and the running game. So we're going to play too high all game and force him to check down underneath. And, like, it's the classic Bill Belichick mentality. I'm going to take away what you do best, and if you beat me doing what you stink at, then it is what it is. Like, if Anthony Richardson could beat you throwing over the middle of the field, then, oh, well, it is what it is. He had a great day, and unfortunately, you're just going to need Drake May to pop off on the offense. But I need to see that commitment from the defense. Be like, look, we know what you do well. We're going to take it away. We know we can. Let's do it. And they haven't done that in past weeks. Like, I mean, you look at the – why are we running cover zero against – Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp.
Not ideal.
How does that make yeah. any sense, and especially when you're not getting any pressure from the cover zero?
And I think what I'm watching, not just today out of this defensive coaching staff and players, but really the rest of the season, is can they adjust faster than they have? And what I
Absolutely.
Mean by that is you look at the Week 3 Jets game. They come out, they're pressuring Aaron Rodgers left and right, and he's carving them up. So late in the second quarter, they adjust, they play more coverage, and they really slowed the Jets down after that. But why are you waiting till late in the second
you
quarter?
You should know that right away.
Right? Last week against Miami, they came out to start the second half and used different defensive fronts to slow down Miami's run game, and it worked, but why are you waiting till the third quarter? Like, these are the things, and part of it is, look, Covington's new. They're not as talented maybe as we thought they were on defense, too, and they just haven't played well. But why are you waiting so long to adjust these things? Why are you playing so much, it looked like, man against the Dolphins in the red zone when they're motioning and there's bad communication, whatever, and you're messing, like,
I don't
why
even
are
think
you
it's just defensively either.
Yeah.
It's offensively.
Oh, sure.
Like
right.
They
yeah.
start so well on both sides of the ball. Like the last few games, they get out to 7-10-point leads at times because the offense looks good, the defense yeah. is stopping them originally, but then the other team adjusts on both sides, and there's zero adjustment for the Patriots.
Early
back.
In that Rams game, their offense looks awesome.
Awesome.
Like that
Dynamite.
Play, I thought the play design
was it the holding
call
penalty
and throw,
that brought it back on that second drive?
Yeah, but the first one, the Kendrick Bourne touchdown, like that was, I was like, okay, they're cooking today.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of tailed off. And that's
no adjustment.
And I think you're right. Like, because I was focusing defensively when I was thinking, but you're right. It's been an issue on offense all year long. Like, they'll have a good series to do. Even this Miami game last week, I thought their best series of the game offensively was the one where they missed the field goal because they actually drove 60 yards.
Yeah.
They were mixing it up. It felt like they had the Dolphins' defense off balance. What happens? You have three penalties on the drive, the false start and the holding back to back. Now, boom, you miss a field goal. But you had Miami off balance for a whole series, and then it never happened again.
Yeah.
Like, where is the adjust? Like, so did Miami adjust, and you couldn't match it? Like, that's something to watch, because I know a lot of people out there, like,
it's a chess match.
Oh, you know, Mayo and his future, and Covington, and Alex Van Pelt. I mean, I think Alex Van Pelt on the Drake May development side has done a really good job.
I agree. Totally agree.
The issue, and I would say with him and Covington, is week after week after week, if you're too slow to adjust, you're not going to win games.
Yeah.
Like, you just, they should have won the Rams game.
Death in the NFL.
Yeah. Like, they should have won that Rams game. They were slow to adjust. They should have beaten Seattle in week two. They couldn't execute in key situations. Two teams that, yes, they were better than you, but you were slow to adjust or you couldn't handle key situations well, and you didn't win.
Yeah, I totally agree, and that's going to be a big point of emphasis for me going forward the rest of the season, is how quickly can they adjust in the middle of games? Because, again, I think they do a really good job of the initial game plan coming out, whether it's the scripted plays to open on offense or the original plan and scheme on defense. But as soon as the other team adjusts, you look like you're falling backwards.
Yeah,
you're not even challenging them.
Yeah, and you go back to when was the last time the Patriots played a really great second half? I mean, maybe that Jets win, I would say. And if you want, even the Bears game, defensively, they were terrific.
Sure, but the Bears were just such a disaster at that point in time.
I mean, since then, they fired their OC and their head coach.
Yeah. Like,
but offensively, even in the Bears game, I mean, they were 1-for-5 in the red zone. In their last red zone possession, Drake May threw what should have been an end zone interception that got dropped. So it's like, okay, you got to the red zone, but then when the Bears adjusted and they had something ready for you, you end up kicking field goals. And in the Bears game, it didn't hurt you. But that's just, again, one of those things where I think you're right, where they've had several games this year where they've come out. Even the Jacksonville game in London, we forget, they were up 10-0 in that game.
Yeah.
And they were moving the ball well.
They've had leads in so many games this year.
Yeah.
Like, to start early, and then they just, they fall apart.
Yeah, the Seattle game, they were up early, right, if I remember. The Miami home loss.
The Rams game. Like, it's just, it constantly happens where they find themselves in great positions and can't hold on to it. They're definitely not a front-runner team by any means.
No. And that's part of this, too, and you and I talked about this in August on this station and other places, that when you have this many rookies, and when I say rookies, not just players, but rookie head coach, rookie DC, rookie special teams coordinator, not a rookie OC, but as far as running a whole offense, calling a whole offense, only the second time he's done it in his career. So when you have this many rookies, even a rookie at GM, there's going to be these growing pains and there's going to be these issues. That's why what frustrated me is these last 2 weeks were so much like that Seattle and Jets week 2 and 3 back to back. I'm like, okay, week 2 and 3 that happens. It's not good, but okay, it's week 2 and 3. You know, week 12, week 13, week 14, this stuff is happening. Are you really getting better? Are you adjusting? And I think that, to me, that's what I'm watching today, and that's what I'm watching the rest of this entire season.
The inactives are officially out for the Indianapolis Colts. Alec Pierce is active today. However, inactives for the Colts, we have Tanner Bortolini, guard, Josh Downs, Ashton Doolin, Sam Ellinger, Darren Hall, Isaiah Land, and Braden Smith. So two of their receivers for the Colts are inactive today. We also have the inactives out for your New England Patriots. They are as follows: KJ Osborne, Marte Mapu, Joe Milton, Lester Cotton, Tyrese Robinson, Jaquelin Roy, Titus Leo. So guys like Dietrich Wise are officially off the inactives list. He is officially back this week.
Jabril Peppers might play.
Marte Mapu is like the big one here that seems to be off. Jaquelin Roy, I guess, is playing.
He
well
is good against the run. I mean, we were talking about that.
Been a big guy on the interior. So those two are going to hurt a little bit. But overall, I mean, this Patriots team is pretty healthy headed into this game. I would expect that they are going to pull out every stop they can to try and win this football game today against the Colts. Like, this is probably the best opportunity you have at a win the rest of the way.
Yeah, not to sound morbid, but you look at this schedule coming up. You have the bye week after Arizona. I'm still not 100% sold on them, but they're pretty good. They're fighting to win that division. We know how good Buffalo is. The Chargers are good. So, yeah, this is, on paper at least, the best opportunity you have to win a game for the rest of the season. And I think you mentioned the guy Dietrich Wise being back. I think that's a big deal. They really missed him when he was out on the edge.
The edge really well.
He does a great, great job with that. And honestly, and I talked about this earlier in the year, he should be playing more than he has been. That's been one of the mysteries to me, is at least earlier this year, and he kind of ticked up, of course, right before he got hurt. He wasn't playing enough. And I think if you have him and Anfernee Jennings on the edge, that's a huge help against Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, and it's going to allow Keon White and Christian Barmore to really kind of do some damage on that interior, which I think is going to be, this is the first time they have their legitimate starting front in quite some time, right?
You're really all year, because once Barmore came back, Wise was out.
You're going to have that rotation of the five guys in Jennings, Wise, Keon White, Devon Godshaw, and Christian Barmore to kind of rotate through in that middle and exterior of the defensive front, which I think is going to be important in this matchup, because Jonathan Taylor is such a threat. He's so good, and especially with Anthony Richardson, he's been so much better with Richardson in the backfield, because you have to account for Richardson running.
Yeah. Richardson's the Colts' second leading rusher.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, he had a great rushing game last week against the Lions, maybe not so much passing, only completing 39% of his passes.
Not ideal.
But I think that's another opportunity for the New England Patriots, right? They're getting healthy here. Christian Gonzalez, even though he was a little banged up last week, seems to be much healthier this week. There's going to be opportunities. With Josh Downs out for the Colts, less opportunity in the middle of the field, I would suspect, for the Colts in that short to intermediate range. And you're going to have some chances for guys like Gonzalez to make some plays on the football. Like, there's Anthony Richardson's going to give you a chance to make a pick. And this team only has four interceptions on the season. Like, you need to capitalize on Anthony Richardson's inaccuracies this week.
I'm glad you brought that up, because for me, that's the most important key to this game for the Patriots winning, is forcing Anthony Richardson turnover, because guy completes 47% of his passes, which Tommy Curran eloquently told us is 1940s type numbers. Right?
Terry Bradshaw numbers.
Yeah. So 47% of his passes, he's thrown seven picks. If you're into PFF, he's got 11 turnover-worthy plays throwing the ball. He will give you the ball. And last week, look, Gonzalez had the scoop and score, which in the grand scheme of that game didn't make a difference, but it was like,
you thought for a second it might.
I'm not going to lie, I kind of did.
There was a brief, I think that's the one thing with this Patriots team, there are brief moments of hope, and then they are quickly extinguished.
Yes, there's 59 minutes of no hope. And at least it was like, okay, they created a turn. And it wasn't even they created it, but they capitalized. There was a turnover. They scored. Like, all year, they have not been able to do it.
None.
There's been, I think, only one time all year where they forced a game-changing turnover, and that was week one on the goal line in Cincinnati when Kyle Duggar forced that fumble. Yeah. I think that's, unless I'm missing one shot, I think that's the only significant forced turnover they've had all year that's changed the game. They've had a few others, but that's the only one I think that's changed the game.
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at the wins, and in changing the game, a lot of times that applies to the wins. Like, you look at the wins, I don't remember a game-changing turnover in that Jets game. You talked about the Cincinnati one, and then in that Bears game, you just dominated with the sacks. Like, that was more or less the turnovers in that game, and that was just more, again, a product of how atrocious the Bears were offensively with Shane Waldron and Matt Eberflus.
They'll be better when Bill Belichick's coaching them next
year. Ooh, you think Bill Belichick's going to be a Bears coach? Is this your take?
No, actually, my sneaky take is watch out for Baltimore or San Francisco.
Kyle Shanahan's not getting fired. I continue to tell people that Shanahan's not going anywhere. I don't think John Harbaugh is either. He skates on everything.
I think the Cowboys and the Giants.
Everybody blames Lamar Jackson instead.
I know. Why? Yeah.
I don't know.
But
he's the best quarterback in football right now.
I think it's Cowboys and Giants for Bill, and then maybe the Bears. I put the Bears maybe at three.
That's fair. Yeah, a lot of people are still high on the Jaguars of all teams.
I don't buy that.
I
wouldn't be blown away, but I just don't.
I buy it in that I believe the cons would give him full and total control. And if that's exactly what he wants, that's an organization that will do it, whereas I don't think Baltimore definitely would not do that, and I don't think San Francisco would either.
Yeah.
And so, to me, it's like, oh, okay, that
And
that,
I don't even think
tracks.
The Cowboys would give him full control.
No, Jerry Jones wants to be in front of the camera at all times.
Yeah, the Eagles is an interesting one, because they did have a period of time with Chip Kelly where Howie Roseman lost a quote-unquote power struggle, receded to the back for a while, still stayed there, and then once Chip Kelly got fired,
clearly Howie Roseman was the right choice.
Like, he elevated back. So it's just, there is precedent for that there, so that's, I don't know, fun little story.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know the relationship between Roseman and Belichick, but that could be.
I think it's pretty good.
I would have said the Eagles were an option until I've seen them over the last 2 months, and they have been awesome.
That
Eagles-Ravens game today is going to be.
I can't wait.
Dynamite.
I went to the Patriots joint practice with the Eagles, and so, you know, I'm out there, I'm down on the field, and like those, so I'm near, and I'm like, wow, this Eagles team is big, strong, and I know that's cliche, but I'm like, these dudes are huge. Like, there was a noticeable gap.
They kicked ass.
Between them and the Patriots. And not just like, oh, they're more talented. I'm like, these guys are all bigger. They're all faster. They're all stronger. And part of that was a commentary on where the Patriots are at.
Yeah.
But still, it's two NFL teams, and I'm like, wow.
And you look at the Eagles this year, too. Like, that pass rush is back to what it was 2 years ago when they made that Super Bowl run, where they're constantly in your grill. They're
Bryce
constantly
Huff
getting
has been
pressure.
A nice addition for them.
Yeah, Brandon Graham being out, it's going to stink for them going forward. But, I mean, and then the two rookie corners and DeJean and Quinyon Mitchell were like, what are we doing? We're giving Cooper DeJean to them in, like, the second round. What are we doing here? He was like the best corner in the draft, and he falls second round. But we're talking New England Patriots here, Indianapolis Colts. The inactives are out for those that missed it. Josh Downs, Sam Ehlinger, Ashton Doolin, Darren Hall, Isaiah Land, Tanner Bordellini, and Braden Smith are inactive for the Indianapolis Colts. And for your New England Patriots, it's KJ Osborne, Marte Mapu, Joe Milton III, Lester Cotton, Tyrese Robinson, Jaquelin Roy, and Titus Leo. So we have the full inactives overall. Patriots relatively healthy. It is interesting, though, I think with Marte Mapu, it's noted he is a healthy scratch. Do you think that is the return of Jabril Peppers, or do you think that this is kind of a punishment thing? Where are you at with the Marte Mapu?
Yeah, Mapu's had a interesting young career so far, because this is a guy, was he the Big Sky Defensive Player of the Year in 2022?
Like Sacramento State.
Yeah, but he was a great player there. He was kind of that, like, he was so good, he did everything there.
He was a safety linebacker hybrid.
And then last year, didn't really get on the field much all year, and the Patriots defense was really good last year. I get it. This year, especially when you had no Peppers, I'm like, okay, Mapu could have a big role.
At times he was the green dot guy this year, right?
And now, I think it's a clear signal to me, Peppers is going to play, and maybe play a lot. So do they feel like some of those miscommunications last week that we blame on Kyle Duggar, were they as much Mapu? Was it, you know, I don't know. Maybe
is this
that's
also
their
credit
view?
To Del Pettis for playing pretty well last couple weeks. Jalen Hawkins playing pretty well.
Yeah.
And it's just like he's just the odd man out this
Could
week.
Could be. Yeah, and maybe, and I don't know if it's directly related, but with Dietrich Wise being back, you're going to play maybe some bigger fronts.
Sure.
So maybe you won't use him. Because I think Mapu's best role, sure, he can play safety, but if he's that hybrid safety, almost like what Kyle Duggar kind of is, that's a great role for him. But maybe they just don't want to use that role as much today. I don't know.
Which seems odd. Like, I feel like this is an opportunity to have that hybrid safety role. Like, I would want three or four safeties on the field at all time against this team because it's...
Patriots traditionally love using three safeties, too.
Yeah, especially because you can play too high with, you know, your Del Pettis's, your Jalen Hawkins of the world, allow them to just kind of play free safety center field the entire game so that Anthony Richardson doesn't beat you deep. And then the bigger guys, like your Jabril Peppers, your Marte Mapus, who can come up and hit. You load them into the box a little bit, allow them to cover the tight ends. I mean, they have some... Mo Alie-Cox is a big dude at tight end, the former basketball player. So you're going to need some size and speed to cover those guys, and you're going to need to stop Jonathan Taylor. I think that is imperative, especially when your linebackers have not played.
I think you're going
to
see a decent amount of that Brennan Schooler Longhorn package today, like what they did with Caleb Williams.
I hope so.
The spy, but
you didn't see that. Like, you saw it, what, once last week in the end of the game when it really didn't matter?
Yeah, if that... Right, yeah. So... That's why, like, I was like, maybe Mapu could be a guy that could fill that role, but maybe they just like Schooler better there. But, yeah, if I'm the Patriots, I use that package at least a handful of times, maybe on early downs, because you don't want Richardson, you know, making it second and three because he ran for seven. Force him to throw the ball.
Agreed.
Because if he's completing 47% of his passes, he throws a bunch of picks, just force him to throw the ball. And I think that package defensively, and that's another thing, right? How does DeMarcus Covington approach this? Does he approach it like they did with Caleb Williams? And of course, as you mentioned, part of that was the Bears being bad. Or does he try something different? How does he adjust? Like, as much as we want to watch the Patriots offense today, I have my eye even more so on their defense.
Yeah, I think that's really important too. Forcing Anthony Richardson to throw the football, I think, is another big reason why it's important to have Dietrich Wise out there.
Yeah.
He's going to set that edge. He's going to play contain. Yeah. He's not going to allow Richardson to just start running away.
Yeah.
And he's going to force him to throw the football, which is going to be a big deal.
Huge game today for defensive ends today.
Couldn't agree more. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. 37937 if you want to text in as well. This is WEEI Football Sunday right here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Coming up next, John Lyons, the former college coach, not quite Brockton High coach, not quite former NFL player, but Lyons will give you his three keys to Patriots Colts coming up next here on WEEI Football Sunday. It's WEEI Football Sunday here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Shyam and John Lyons with you up until 1 o'clock here. And right now, though, we are going to get into former college coach John Lyons' three keys to a New England Patriots victory over the Indianapolis Colts. Lyons, Let me know, what is your first key to the game?
Yes, I may not be Wiggy, but I have some keys here. Right, number one, we've kind of mentioned this already.
Not to rip off Rich Keefe, but I've got keys.
Wow. How about that?
Yeah, you know.
Next thing we know, Shime will be doing a
Keys, tier. Keys, though, one of the best segments on the radio.
Yeah.
It's tremendous.
Next thing you know, Shime will be doing a Tier Tuesday.
If you've
Tuesday.
Never heard it, yeah, it's Tier Tuesday. Maybe we can review. Maybe even What Happened.
Wow.
I just would like to point out, I was there for the inception of What Happened years and years ago now. So, but regardless, if you haven't ever heard Keys Keys, please do yourself a favor. You can download the Odyssey app, AUDACY. You can listen to this station, any show from the station at any time from anywhere you are. Go back, take a listen. But anyways, let's get to John Lyons' first key to Pat's Colts.
To me, number one key, and we've talked about this already, force Anthony Richardson to turn the ball over. Completes 47% of his passes. He's thrown 7 picks this year, 11 turnover-worthy plays per PFF. Last week, you alluded to this. 11 of 28 passing.
Awful.
This dude is not a good passer.
Granted, the Lions defense is really good, but at the same time, he struggled mightily.
Yeah, I mean, first, he was overdrafted to begin with. He should have sat for probably 2 years and developed. The Colts rushed him in. We saw him tap out earlier this year, and he's looked a little better since he came back, but still, 47% is 47%.
Yeah.
7 picks, and this is something, again, Patriots over the last couple of years have struggled a lot to create turnovers. Remember 2022? They had, I think, the most turnovers in the league. And not only that, it was like a near record for turnovers forced. 2023, they went way down. This year, again, we talked about earlier, one significant turnover forced. That was week one against Cincinnati. They've only had 4 interceptions all year. So force Anthony Richardson to turn the ball over.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think that's going to provide, and again, that's going to provide your offense with short fields, and that's kind of what you want, right? You want to give Drake May as many opportunities to score as possible. And, you know, the shorter the field, the easier that's going to be. And whether it's, you know, you end up with field goals or you end up with touchdown points or points, and you're going to need as many of them as you can get today against an Indianapolis Colts team who has been at least competent most of the year, if not pretty good. And so, all right, John, what is key number two?
Run the ball. Colts? And offensively, they have to run the ball effectively.
Big Montre day.
I think so. And I think it could be a decent Gibson day as well, because I thought he popped a little bit against Miami, especially, again, that one good drive he had against Miami. He looked all right, so he didn't do much other than that. I say run the ball for a couple reasons. Drake May has been good this year, but I feel like over the last several weeks, he's been kind of shaky turnover-wise. That will help him settle in. Also, this Colts run defense is not good. So control the ball, run the ball. I don't want to say break their will, but if you can get to that point in the fourth quarter, do it. So I think this is going to be, especially because, again, Zaire Franklin in the middle of that Colts defense is a great player, but on the whole, not a good run defense, not a good defense. I want to come out and run the ball effectively and convert that into points.
Awesome. Yeah, I totally get that. I don't think that this team is good enough to just run the football, unfortunately.
No, they're not.
That's their biggest issue.
Sure.
And I also think that Ramondre Stevenson looks the worst he's ever looked in a New England Patriots uniform. I don't know if it's a health thing. I don't know if it's an offensive line thing, a combination of the two. He just doesn't look healthy. They were not prepared for him to not be awesome this year, and so they don't have a second option. I think Antonio Gibson's a fine kind of like scat back, third down back, but I just don't think between the tackles they have a guy who can consistently gain them a couple yards on any carry in any situation. And so I think that's kind of a big issue for them this week. All right, Lions, what's your third key to the game?
Score touchdowns in the red zone. They've too many times, they're near the bottom of the league in red zone offense. I mentioned that Bears game. They scored 19 points. They got to the red zone 5 times. They only scored 1 touchdown. I mean, right now their offense is 29th in the red zone, 46.88%. Can you convert a couple of those into touchdowns? Because I think this Colts team, if you can force a Richardson turnover or two, if you can make him throw the ball, I don't see the Colts scoring more than 20 points in this game, even with our frustrations for the Patriots defense that we've had. So can you just score 21? Can you score 3 touchdowns in the red zone? Can you convert those red zone opportunities into touchdowns? Because if they win this game, I think we're going to look back and say, Richardson turned the ball over, the Patriots ran it pretty well, and when they got to the red zone, they were, say, 3 of 4 or 3 of 5. You know, they scored 3 touchdowns in the red zone.
Well, I think that's the good thing, too, about Drake May is once they get to the red zone, they've been one of the most efficient teams in football in the red zone with Drake May at quarterback. Like, they have been excellent. The issue is a lot of the time is getting to the red zone, right? Drake May has had a decent amount of turnovers, but I don't think any of them have come in the red zone.
And their issue has been they have not run the ball well in the red zone either. So they've become
they're
one-dimensional.
Forced to pass.
So Like, again, you're 29th in the red
zone. Perfect opportunity for a quarterback keeper, you know, a little RPO play. And like, I mean, come on, dial something up.
That's one thing where, and I know you and I talked about this in the summer, I'm not a supporter of doing designed runs a lot with Drake May because of where he's at health-wise.
Inside the 10-yard line or on 4th and 1, that's when it matters.
Exactly. So that's what I'm getting at, is at the goal line, perfect time for that stuff. Even if it's a read option thing where he can still hand the ball off, that to me is where they should do that. They really haven't done it at all. I want to see more of that. And I, please, please, no more Jalen Polk or Javon Baker inline blocking in short yarded situations.
Amen. Preach.
I hate that. So it was a problem in the preseason. It was a problem early in the season. It hurt them against the Rams. Just bring another tight end in. Bring City So in. I don't care. No more Jalen Polk or Javon Baker inline blocking at the line of scrimmage. I can't stand it.
There you go. There's the three keys from former college coach John Lyons here on WEEI Football Sunday. We will continue. I'm going to get John's take on Mego's emotional roller coaster from earlier in the program today. We'll continue. Andy Hart will join us at about 12:30. We'll have Pop, Block, and Drop coming up at 12:45 here on WEEI Football Sunday with Shyman Lyons.